course, as was mentioned, we're very close to Passover. We've got another, we're just another, just a month away. As was mentioned, it's the time of the full moon. This is about the time of the full moon of Adar. And as I mentioned last week, a month before Passover, you had the Feast of Purim, the Jewish Feast of Purim, and that's that was Thursday and Friday. That was the last 2 days were the commemoration of God's deliverance of the Jews from the plot of Haman and the Persian Empire. And it's if you haven't, I still recommend that you go back and take a look at Esther over this weekend, because there's a lot of parallel between God's deliverance there of those of the Jews at that time and of His people, and of course His spiritual people today even. And also, it's very interesting when Esther fasted, because right now on the 13th of Adar, there's the day before. You've got then the 14th and 15th are Purim, but the 13th is usually observed by the Jews as called the Fast of Esther. But Esther didn't actually fast on that day. That was many months later. It was almost a year later from when the original decree happened to kill the Jews. And it's interesting, if you look at the account, it was actually in the first month, right in the middle of the first month, that Esther fasted for 3 days and nights. So it was right at the time of Passover and unleavened bread, interestingly enough. The 3 day and 3 night fast, overlaps there pretty closely with the beginning of the Passover and unleavened bread period. So that might well be, just about the same time of Christ being dead for 3 days and 3 nights at the beginning of unleavened bread. Very interesting parallels there. So clearly, I don't think that was a coincidence. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about that today, though. We are coming up on the Passover, but I wanted to talk about what I've been talking about, because I think it's very relevant to the Passover as well, as we examine our lives and seeing if we're in the faith, if we're following God's will for our lives. And that is the series I've been giving on the commandments, and I do want to continue that. I gave an introduction in one sermon. I don't remember if it was the last Pentecost. It was a while back. And then, of course, I covered three commandments in one sermon, and then I covered the fourth commandment in one sermon, all about the Sabbath. And we'll see where we get to today. Hopefully, we'll get through a few more. I don't think we will finish today, because there's a lot to say about God's commandments, just in going through the depth of them. And the purpose, again, I just want to mention again, and I'd like to have you turn again to two verses, just as a by way of reminder, to know why we're going through this. If you turn over to Psalm 119, there's a lot of people who say, they maintain that the commandments are this bare minimal standard of righteousness that God gave, and that for New Testament Christians, we must go far beyond that, because the commandments don't specifically forbid vanity, lust, and greed, or any of these kind of things. And that's just simply false. The commandments embrace much more than the letter wording of them. There's much more implied by the commandments than is actually stated, and that's important, because we have to understand, what is God's intent? What is the spirit of the law? And when we say the spirit of the law, by the way, that doesn't mean that we are inventing a whole lot of new law. It has to do with the fact that we're understanding the very spirit and intent in which that statement was made, the statement that God gave in the commandment. When he said that, it embraced a huge principle, and it was just something that, we can count off on the fingers, 10 commandments. But these are very broad principles. They say much more than what is worded there specifically. But again, we have Psalm 119, this great ode to the law of God, and it says in verse 96, "I have seen the consummation of all perfection, but your commandment is exceedingly broad." And that's the key here, and that's what we're trying to show, that God's commandments are exceedingly broad, and that they represent the consummation of all perfection. They sum up God's will if we understand what the real intent is behind these commandments. And of course, if you flip over to the book of Ecclesiastes, the very end of Ecclesiastes is a sort of an exploration of life and going through all of these issues and problems that people have, and what it all comes down to, what it all boils down to. It says in Ecclesiastes 12:13, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all." As it says in the King James, "For this is the whole duty of man." Now think about that. This is man's all. This is what it's all about. And if we understand that, then we can see that the commandments are not a bare minimal standard. The commandments are the summation, and they give us the full will of God. We just have to understand that there's much more there that needs to be specifically delineated. These are general broad principles which we are to live our lives based upon. And if we do that, we'll be seeking how God wants us to follow him in each of these specific areas. But these commandments imply a great deal beyond what they merely say in the letter, and it's important that we recognize this. Well, let's turn over to the commandments back in Exodus chapter 20. And of course, we went through the first of the commandments already. So I won't review them here. Probably at the very end, I will kind of make a summary review of where we've been with some of these commandments. But I would like us to look at Exodus 20. And we'll turn to the fifth commandment. That's the one we're on. The fifth commandment is in verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. And I'll also read to you really briefly. It's basically almost the same wording. A little bit more is mentioned in Deuteronomy 5:16. Honor your father and mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you. So that your days may be long, that it may be well with you. This is a reasoning given behind it. And actually, as is mentioned in the New Testament, this is the first commandment with such a promise given. I'd like you to turn over to the New Testament, keeping the words of the commandment in mind. Turn over to the New Testament, the book of Ephesians. The book of Ephesians. And you know what? I want us to, before we actually look at this, I'll have us hold our places in Ephesians when you get there, because we'll go there in just a moment. But first, I would actually like you to turn to Malachi, if you would. So holding your place in Ephesians, which we'll go to in just a moment, turn over to the book of Malachi, because I want to mention something here that I think is a very interesting thing about this fifth commandment. And that is that the fifth commandment is the first of the commandments that deal with loving our neighbor. We have the first four commandments, which were about how to love God. And of course, these tell us how to love our neighbor as ourselves, as we were also directed in the second great commandment. But this commandment has a major overlap, being right in the center there of commandment number 5, with the commandments that honor God, because the issue is one of honoring our parents. And who is our ultimate parent? I mean, that goes without saying. The creator of us all, our maker, the great God. And of course, for us who have a spiritual relationship with God, we're spiritually begotten by the Father. But the whole human race has God as a father in the sense of through creation. And I'd like you to see that God points this out to the nation of Israel when he says in Malachi chapter 1, notice what he says here in verse 6. He says, a son honors his father and a servant his master. By the way, that's an interesting parallel too, because we're talking about honor to authority in that sense, and there's a parallel there. But he says, if then I am the father, which he is, he says, where is my honor? And if I am a master, where is my reverence, says the Lord of hosts, to you priests who despise my name? Yet you say, in what way have we despised your name? But here clearly God is saying, I am the father, where is my honor? Because we are supposed to give honor to our father, to our mother, to our parents. We're supposed to give honor. And God is the Father. He's our Creator. And in that sense, we should recognize that the fifth commandment forms a bridge of sorts between the first four of the Ten Commandments concerning our relationship with God and the last six concerning our relationship with our fellow human beings. Now, we who are parents, of course, should think of ourselves first as children. We are parents, you know, we have children that are under our charge, but we are first ourselves children, the children, not just of our human parents, but the children of God, ultimately. It is just as important for us to respect and obey our Father in heaven as it is for our children to respect and obey us. This is a parallel here. It's very critical. Only then is it possible for us to fully grasp our role as the spiritual leaders of our children. I mean, think about that. I mean, here God's saying, you're supposed to give this honor to the Father. Well, He is a perfectly honorable Father. He's the Almighty God. And we have to be perfectly honorable for our children. When we first honor and obey God, we set the proper example for our children, and they can then develop habits of respect and obedience by observing our example and applying what they are taught. I'd like you to again now go where I had you turn to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. And this talks about children's responsibility to obey. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. First of all, I want us to notice that it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. So clearly it has to be in the Lord. When we think about children, you know, growing up in a maybe in a home where God is not followed, children actually still have a responsibility to follow God where they're able to, because the Bible also tells us in Acts 5:29 that we are to obey God rather than man. So if you're a teenager living at home and your parents are trying to get you to break the Sabbath, you should not do that if you understand the truth. I mean, that's obeying God rather than man. Nevertheless, so we are to obey in the Lord when we're, you know, growing up. Children that are growing up, you have to obey your parents. That's part of the sense of honoring. The commandment actually just said honor your parents, by the way. It didn't say obey. Here it explicitly says obey, but clearly part of honoring the parents as children is this obedience that must be given to the parents. But again, it must be only in the Lord. That's important to understand. And actually, we should understand that within the context of the Ten Commandments themselves. Because if we think about the commandments, they start out with what? You know, have no other gods before the true God. And, you know, don't take God's name in vain, and don't break the Sabbath. Then we get to this commandment number 5 about honor your father and mother. Well, obviously, if there's a conflict in that with the first part, we obey God first. So we have that principle right there in the commandments themselves. We don't necessarily need this clarification, but it's given here for us nevertheless very clearly. But also notice it says that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. This is a promise that's given. There's actually a great reward in this life for honoring our parents, as we're told here. For children obeying the parents are going to receive a blessing for doing that, because it sets up their whole life in the right direction. Because how you honor your father and mother is part of a broader picture of honoring authority in general and how you conduct yourself in life. And of course, we know that this applies very much to our relationship with God as a parent. As He said, you know, where is my honor if I'm the father? I also want to point out here verse 4, because it says, on the same theme, it says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Now the commandment says, honor your father and mother. That's the specific wording of the commandment. But again, let's think about what that implies. What does that implies more than what is simply stated. Because to honor someone, the expectation is that they be honorable. Right? You can't, you know, if you say children honor your father and mother, but the father and mother are horrid, dishonorable people that you know, you wouldn't otherwise think of honoring, then that goes against the spirit of the commandment. So if you're dealing with some kind of abusive parents or things like that, That doesn't mean you have to respect and honor all of that. However, to the extent that we can honor our parents, even problem ones with great big problems, we must, because of the fact that they are our parents. But again, that has to do with the role. Like if a parent abandoned a child, is that parent really a parent then? Or are they just the sperm donor, as it were? You know, they're the biological parent, is not who walks out. That's not really a parent. So I mean, is that responsibility to that parent is not there in the same way. This is talking about the person that's raising you, that's rearing you, that's training you, that's, as it says here, bringing you up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Primarily, that's for those in the Lord. But if you grew up in the world, of course, they may not have done that. But the fact is, they reared you, they helped you, they gave you your upbringing, and they are to be honored for that. That is what God commands. That's important to do. But it also gives a structure to society, beginning with this foundational building block of the family, which is critical to society. But again, children are told this, that they need to obey their parents, and it's for the children's own good, even if they don't recognize it yet. And of course, this responsibility increases with age, because as a children grows older, they're more accountable. They understand more what their parents do for them and how critical it is that they honor their parents. So they need to do that. And and when they get to a point where they are accountable and they completely dishonor their parents, they are in major trouble according to God. And in fact, he gave some amazing principles in the law about this. I'd like us to flip back over to Exodus. Exodus chapter 21. In Exodus 21, God made a few maybe frightening statements here that probably to some kids that would hear this read to them. Remember, the law was read to the Israelites every 7 years, but I'm sure if they had access to hear this, they might have heard it at other times as well. I wouldn't be surprised if parents who knew this let their children know about it. And that is in Exodus 21, verse 15, God says in his law, "And he who strikes his father or mother shall surely be put to death." And he says down in verse 17, "And he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." Now that seems pretty extreme. You think, wow, that is just, you hear these rebellious kids and they lash out. I think Annika and Micah have probably both smacked Donna in the face a few times, but that's not what this is talking about. It's not talking about little kids who aren't accountable in that sense. They don't really know better. This is talking about probably more grown children, maybe not even teenagers, because you have to think about how this would work exactly. The parents are the ones in most of these cases that are going to have to actually bring this case forward. So a lot of times parents probably won't do that with their kids if they're thinking their kids aren't, you know, really of full intent and that kind of thing. And so they're not going to bring them forward for this penalty necessarily. I'm not sure exactly how this all worked. Now, you might have had this happen in public and it was witnessed, and then you'd have a societal issue. And probably, well, you should, because this is a pretty serious matter. If you've got an older teen or certainly a young adult who would do this to their parent, that person is, in God's, the way that God shows this here, that person is a reprobate in society. Because it means if they're going to do that, and they're going to have that approach to their own parents, then how would they deal with the rest of authority? How would they deal with their life in society and the fact that they would do that? Now, I'm sure there could be some mitigating circumstances if they were defending themselves from being hit themselves. These are the kind of things that obviously would have to be taken into account. But if this is just some kind of this outright defiance turns into a... And we say curse their parents, it doesn't just mean they say something bad about their parents. It's really talking about some very horrible curse on their parents, you know, calling death down on their parents or something. I mean, this is severe. And God says the penalty is death. And I don't even know if this penalty was ever frequently carried out, but just the fact that it was listed there in the law, I'm sure, was a deterrent to being bad to your parents. Because this was pretty serious, and God wanted people to know how seriously he took this matter. Turn over, if you will, to the book of Romans. I want to bring out some more about this commandment. Because as I've mentioned, how we respond and act toward our parents and how we honor them, this is an authority in our lives, translates into a respect and honoring of all in authority. It's a broader issue. And I do believe that this is encompassed, again, within the spirit of the commandment. We have to think of what's implied here. If God wants us to honor our parents, is that just... I mean, clearly we're to honor all people to a certain degree, but we're to have a special honor toward our parents who did so much for us. But also, the reason that's given is it says, so that you may live long. What is this saying? I mean, we've got to think about what are the underlying principles here. What it's saying is that parents, these who are in authority, are able to guide your life in a good way. And if you respond well to them and honor them and obey them when you're young and follow their advice and do what they say, that is going to set you up for a long, blessed life. That is what God is saying. Now, what that translates into a broader principle is, of course, we have at the very top, we have God as a father. And of course, if he's of the father and we're following him, and we're doing what he says and going along with what he says, we will live a very long time. We will live for eternity. We will live forever on this land that he has given us. We will never die because we will have that great blessing of following our ultimate parent. But we can see in between that other aspects of authority, societal authority, you know, society is set up with structure, just like the family is, and we need to respect the authority that exists. That doesn't mean that we, again, if we're dealing with abusive authority, that we have to kowtow to everything that's done. That's not the point. But where authority is, you know, there, and it is a good thing, and it is helpful, we should follow that. And in fact, even sometimes with abusive authority, there's a... You kind of just go along. As in certain senses, you don't have to create a disturbance and get yourself and everybody else in big trouble. We want to keep the peace. That's another part of our lives. And we'll read about that here in Romans. I want us to notice what Romans says, because I find this passage very interesting in relation to the commandments of God. Let me see. I think this is the one, I've got like a million markers in my Bible, and I think this is the one place I didn't put a marker. So just a second and I'll be there too. Romans 13, here we are. Oh, I did put a marker, I just didn't see that. You know, you put so many markers in your Bible that it becomes meaningless. You can't find, you might as well just flip to the verses without markers when it becomes that that heavy. Romans 13, verses 8 through 9. It says, "Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law." So what are we talking about? We're talking about this aspect, this second great principle in the Ten Commandments. And it even says this here very clearly in verse 9. "For the commandments," listen to this, "for the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, all are summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Notice this. This is listing the commandments about adultery, murder, stealing, bearing false witness, and coveting. Those are the last five of the commandments. And they are, it's, he says here that they are summed up in "you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Well, what about the fifth commandment? He doesn't mention that commandment. I mean, this is an interesting point. He doesn't mention the fifth commandment as being summed up in that point. But brethren, I would submit to you that he does mention it right before what we just read. And I would like us to look at what he said just before this, because I think then you will see how what the kind of statement that he's making and how this principle of respecting all in authority is actually part of what is meant in the fifth commandment. Let's begin in verse 1 of Romans 13. He says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. That's the first thing he says. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. So the whole sense of an authority structure in society is by God's will and command. Now, it's been abused. People are doing wrong with authority that they're given, no doubt. But the very fact of just having authority and structure in society is clearly the will of God. And he sets people in authority. In verse 2, therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. And again, that's not to say that rulers don't overstep their authority and do wrong themselves. But the general principle when you have government is that it is a restraining force against chaotic evil, against total anarchical destruction of society and mass mayhem is what you'd have if you had no government at all. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister, or God's servant, is what that word there means, to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, God's servant, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. In other words, God's saying, what we're seeing here, is that God put these governments here. Even though sometimes they overstep their authority, he gave us government to keep us from all killing each other and causing each other the worst kind of problems. There has to be some order to society, even under this satanic rule that is ultimately over everything. Otherwise, everybody would just be in major trouble. Verse 5, therefore, he says, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, that is, not only because you're afraid that you're going to be hurt, but also for conscience sake. Because you know that it's right. That's what he's saying. You know that it's right to follow established authority and the structure in society because that was part of the dispensation that God gave, was the dispensation of human government to keep us from going into chaos. And it just is a general principle that he gave through the commandments, the fifth commandment, and we see that here. For because of this, he's talking about government, you also pay taxes. For they are God's ministers or servants attending continually to this very thing. And again, taxes can become burdensome and onerous and problematic, but that's their responsibility in that. I mean, they're being heavy-handed. They shouldn't be. And if we're lawfully able to resist that, you know, more power to you. You may be able even to lawfully resist, but not practically, because they'll still come in and take what they want to take. Well, that's on them. That's their problem. But as far as, you know, submitting to this authority and not being rebellious, I mean, you still have to keep that as your focus. Render, verse 7, therefore, to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due. And by the way, I want to say about taxes is that just the very fact of taxes is not necessarily problematic. I mean, under social contract, if you're going to have a society and provide for some form of government, you might need some form of taxation to keep that going. And that would be by agreement, though. That's what should be the principle. It should be by agreement. But in any case, there is justification for it, but of course we see it as onerous today. But again, under this principle, he says, render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. Notice that. What is the last thing he says right there? Honor to whom honor is due. And who is honor due? Honor is due, as he's talking about, to the governing authorities. For that's who to whom honor is due in this sense. And of course, right in the heart of the Ten Commandments, commandment number 5, honor your father and mother. Clearly, that is the beginning of this whole process of honoring authority. It begins with honoring your parents even before you understand who God is as a child, because that's your road to this respect that you're to have for those in authority, is to honoring your parents. And then he says, in that context, honor to whom honor, he says, verse 8, owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law, for the commandments, And then he lists the next five commandments. But I believe that commandment number five was already covered. That's what I would say is just happened here, is part of that same principle. That's because he's classing it under the principle of you shall love your neighbor as yourself. He's classing what he just talked about, honoring the governing authorities, as part of that. And doesn't it make sense? Think about it, brethren. If we did not honor those in authority, let's say in society, that would be dishonoring to our fellow man. That would actually not be loving our fellow man. Loving our fellow man is following the societal structure. That helps everyone. And so that's why that's classed under this principle of loving your neighbor. You have to follow authority because that's for the good of all. It's not just about you, it's about others too. And so we have that principle here very clearly spelled out. Well, honoring our parents doesn't cease when we become adults. It's a lifetime commitment. We should, you know, we're not having to necessarily obey them. That's not, remember, the commandment. The commandment didn't specifically say, obey your parents. It does say, children, obey your parents in the Lord. That's very clearly stated. But it doesn't say to adults, obey your parents. The commandment is not obey your father and mother. The commandment is honor your father and mother. We should understand this. The commandment is not to obey specifically. For children, it is obey, because that's the way they honor and they need to do that. But once you're an adult and live on your own, you don't have this requirement of obedience in the same way. You do still, of course, have the overriding commandment of honoring your parents, and it's a lifetime commitment. We still should respect their wisdom, consult with them, welcome their continued involvement in our lives, spending time with them, doing our best to keep in touch with them as they get older. Our honoring of them may include physically caring for them and, as necessary, helping to financially support them. I mean, these are ways that we can honor our parents after we have left the nest, so to speak, and we're not there under their immediate care. Jesus criticized those in his day who neglected making appropriate provisions for their elderly parents. Look over at Mark 7. Mark 7, we'll look at verses 9 through 13. I'm going to read this in the NIV. I think it's a little easier to follow, but this is Mark 7, verses 9 through 13. We are told here, this is what Jesus says to them. He says, you have a fine way of setting aside the commandments of God in order to observe your own traditions. For Moses said, honor your father and mother. That's in the Ten Commandments. And anyone who curses his father or mother must be put to death. And so here, Christ is actually making this point to show just how serious a matter this is. That's how important it is. He says, but you say that if a man says to his father or mother, whatever help you might otherwise have received from me is Corban. That is, a gift devoted to God. Then, Jesus says, you no longer let him do anything for his father or mother. Thus you nullify the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down. Now here's what they were saying. Well, we would help our parents, but we're giving this money to the temple. We're doing something for God. I put that in quotes. I don't know what they were doing it for. It was probably to look righteous in some sense. We're going to give this money to the temple, and so because of that, we're not able to help out our parents. Jesus Christ said that is an abomination. It is equivalent to cursing your father and mother, is what he's implying here. That's what he says. That how absolutely unbelievable of a statement that is. I mean, it brings to light, you know, when Paul later talks about, you wonder where Paul gets these principles, but he talks about, those who have the responsibility to help out their own, you know, to help out their families. He says he who does not provide for his own family, you know, is worse than an unbeliever. Because that was their responsibility. They had that as an important responsibility as they were able to do that. And if they had, and think about this in a modern context, if we, you know, if it's time to give an offering, and we take, you know, give all this money to the church, and that leaves us with nothing to help out the family with, parents, particularly mentioned here, then God is not well pleased with that offering. That is not what God expects. We have to have our duties in the right order. That doesn't mean that we don't have a responsibility to give offerings. We have a responsibility to do all these things as we're able to, but we need to certainly respect and honor our parents and being able to take care of them as we're able to. Jesus, of course, set the perfect example in this regard. I mean, we might think, well, he obeyed his father. He talks about how he perfectly kept his father's commandments. Certainly in a spiritual sense, his heavenly father, he did that. But it was more than that. Because I'd like you to turn over to John 19. I mean, we think about the care that Jesus exercised. He had just gone through the most unbelievable treatment that probably anybody has gone through. He had been scourged, beaten, spit upon, mocked, dragged down a road, and nailed to the cross and affixed to the upright, which may have been a tree. I think it was probably a literal tree that he was affixed to. And of course, we'll be, you know, remembering that as we come up here on Passover. And it was absolutely horrific, terrible brutalization beyond anything that we can imagine. And yet we see here in John 19, start looking here in verse 25. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus, his mother. She was still there. And his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus, therefore, saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, Woman, behold your son. Then he said to the disciple, Behold your mother. And from that hour the disciple took her to his own home. So even while hanging on the cross in agony, he honored his mother, Mary, directing that she be taken care of by the Apostle John. He's giving instructions about caring for his mother while he's there on the cross. Instead of the woe is me, he's looking out for others and he's talking about caring for his mother. That's a very unbelievable situation, but it shows the importance of honoring your parents that he did right up there to the very last. It's one of the very last things he did before he left this physical existence. So that's a critical thing that we have to make sure that we're doing in our lives. And it's, again, it's much broader than just the honoring of, you know, just obeying your mother and father when you're growing up. It's a lifelong commitment. And it applies, of course, not just to our parents. It's a much broader principle about following authority and ultimately following God himself. Commandment number 6. Go to that next. And I've only got about 20 minutes left here, so I bet this is probably the one we'll get through. Hopefully we can get through that. But there's a section in here that might take a little bit of time, so I want to see if we're able to do that. But look back over at Exodus 20 again. Exodus 20, of course, the list of the commandments where God spoke the commandments. This was Jesus Christ speaking the commandments there at Mount Sinai. And he said in verse 13, you shall not murder. Of course, you see this a lot of times written in the King James as you shall not kill. And sometimes the word could be translated kill, but the sense here is murder. And it has to do with the fact, and we say, what is murder? Murder is taking to oneself the prerogative of ending the life of another. If you execute someone, if the state executes someone for a crime and God is given the decree of the penalty, then to carry that out was not murder. That was just doing the will of God because that wasn't taking to oneself the prerogative. If God says something is acceptable to do, if God tells you there's a cause for killing someone as he did when he sent people out, he sent the Israelites out to kill people, and if they killed people, that wasn't murder. Some people think it was murder, but it was not murder. That would not classify as murder. It was killing, but it was killing at the command of God, which would not be murder. Murder is when it is you have usurped the role of God, in essence. God is the life giver. He's the only one who has the authority to take life or to order when life should be taken. And if you put yourself in place of God to say, I'll decide when life should be taken, then you are a murderer. That is according to all the commandments, if we go through and see all the principles that God gives in the law. The sixth commandment does not explicitly apply to manslaughter. We do see rules about that given in the law. It doesn't apply explicitly to manslaughter. I want to say this in the right way. Deaths caused accidentally through carelessness or unintentional actions. That is manslaughter. Such deaths, although serious occurrences, are not considered by the laws of God or man to fall into the same category as premeditated murder. However, and this is what I want us to realize about this and why I do believe the principle of manslaughter can come under this commandment. Any negligence involved could well mean that the perpetrator has not valued the lives of others highly enough, which would be a violation of the broader spirit of the commandment. Let's think about that. If you're sitting there with your axe and you're wailing away with an axe and you haven't, and you know, people could be walking around you and you haven't bothered to be very careful to know whether that axe head is tightly affixed to this, you know, to where if you pull back with the axe head goes flying off and hits somebody and kills them, that would be manslaughter. And I would say that in that case, you did not exercise due care. That is a principle in the law. You know, you have this principle of you have to have a railing around the roof of your house. Well, we don't have to do that today because people don't walk around on our roofs normally. But in that time, the roof was a place where some people actually would sleep sometimes and they would actually be there. And so if you had people that were on your roof, you had to make sure that you had a guard around that as a measure of due care. We have to have, and if you didn't, by the way, and somebody fell off, you would be guilty not of, of premeditated murder, but a lack of due care, which I would say is embraced by the spirit of this commandment, because this commandment has to do with valuing human life. That's what it ultimately comes down to in the broad spirit. Do we value human life? And if we do, we will take care to protect human life instead of just, you know, going about our business uncaring about how that affects other people. That's a very critical thing to think about. Jesus, of course, amplified the meaning of murder, and I'd like us to flip over to Matthew 5. In Matthew 5, which you should hold your place here after we read this. Matthew 5, verses 21 through 22. Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment.' But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, 'Raca,' which means you fool, or actually empty head is what it literally means, you empty head, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, 'You fool,' which I think is talking about a curse, it's cursing someone as unfit to exist, basically, shall be in danger of Gehenna, of hellfire. It says, therefore, if he's saying, if you bring your gift to the altar, you need to be reconciled first. But the key here is that just having this attitude of bitter animosity, contempt, or hateful hostility toward others is what? Is also murder. You are also guilty of breaking the same commandment. You're not guilty of breaking another law. You have broken the commandment against murder because you violated the intent. Think about this for a second. This is important to understand. What Christ is saying here is that what you've heard is this command, you shall not murder. And you're taking that as this specific wording. But if you do this other thing, if you have this bitter hatred and stuff, you're actually violating what this command says. Why? Well, of course, these kind of attitudes, malicious attitudes toward others, and the desire to see human beings suffer, will lead, can lead to actual harm of another person. Harm of another person comes out of such thoughts. But it's more than that. It's more than that. What we see is that in God telling us not to murder, He had a broader intent behind it. He wanted us, again, to value human life and not to just, you know, casually dismiss it, or certainly not to curse it and be in contempt of it when we're dealing with others. We need to care about people. That's part of what is embraced by the spirit of this commandment. And what's interesting is actually this was already forbidden in the law. I'd like you to, again, hold your place in Matthew 5, but then I'd like you to flip back over here to Leviticus, in Leviticus chapter 19. And there's quite a few moral principles here given in Leviticus 19. And in Leviticus 19, verses 17 through 18, it says, "You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him." In other words, you need to confront somebody over whatever issue you might be stewing over. You need to get it out in the open and reconciled. 18, "You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." So this whole principle of loving your neighbor, which is the summation of the commandments, is given right there in the Old Testament. But so is this statement in verse 17, "You shall not hate your brother in your heart." In your heart. Everybody says, well, these Old Testament laws, you know, they were just about these physical things. This is not just a physical thing. This is a spiritual principle. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. It's a commandment of God that was given in the Old Testament. And it goes right along. It's an amplification. It was then, and it is now still, an amplification of the meaning of murder in the Ten Commandments. Now, using words and speech to deliberately or maliciously harm the name of others is equally wrong. You know, with the tongue or with the pen, we can attack them verbally. We can assault their respectability by undermining or destroying their reputations. This is aptly called character assassination, as it falls within the spirit of murder. You know, we don't normally think of these terms, but it does. And I want us to see the way God views it. And let's hold our place here too, because I'll come back to, let me see if I will come back right now to you here. I may not get to it today, so don't worry about it, that one. But we will go to Proverbs. I'd like us to go to Proverbs 25. Proverbs 25. Proverbs 25 and verse 18. It says, A man who bears false witness against his neighbor, and again, this would be this thing we're talking about of saying something wrong against somebody, is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. It is an assassination. It is basically it's like you're killing the person. One thing, it could actually lead to their prosecution and death if you're in a trial. Of course, we'll get to the thing against false witnesses later too. But, you know, if you can destroy somebody by what you say about them, and it's a very serious, serious matter. Turn over to Romans 12, the book of Romans, chapter 12. And again, we'll see more of the spiritual principle, which we just read about a little bit in there in the Old Testament. But Romans 12, verse 17, Paul writes, "Repay no one evil for evil." We just saw that about not taking vengeance. It was given in the law. "Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men." This is our responsibility. "Beloved, do not avenge yourself, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." And he even quotes Proverbs here, "Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him." Verse 21, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." So the principle of even helping out your enemy is given in the Old Testament, not just the New. And we can read what Jesus said about this over back over in Matthew 5. We'll look over there at Matthew 5, where we just were. And Matthew 5, of course, being the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus gave a lot of the amplification of these principles in Matthew 5. And let's look at verses 43, starting out, verse 43 and 44. He says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.'" Of course, that part, "hate your enemy," is not what it says there in the Old Testament. "But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." So, again, we see what you're not to do under the commandment. You're not to hate. You're not to kill. You're not to, you know, when you don't have that authority to do so, you are to do what's right in not, let's say, not hurting the person, but it's more than that. You have to value the person. And that includes enemies, even, he's saying. You don't you have the right to go and hurt people like that. You need to do good to them. And that principle is also given in the Old Testament. I'll just refer you to Exodus 23, verse 4. That's where it says, if you see your enemy's ox or donkey straying, you're supposed to take it back to them. That's their financial well-being, by the way. It's not just about care of animals. It's saying, you need to, you know, so if you see something that's hurting the business, for instance, of your enemy, then you actually have a responsibility to, if you're a person, you know, that would be in the know about a situation, to speak up, because that's what the law is. According to God's will, we are supposed to help even our enemies. Of course, we have broader principles here under this commandment to think about. Military warfare is a huge subject. I won't get into it very much, except to say that there are other issues with military warfare besides just the matter of killing. I mean, you have in the military today, you have the issue of putting another God before the true God and having to do with the sovereignty over your life. If you subject yourself to someone who can tell you to go kill someone without, you know, any divine prerogative, that is actually against the commandments too. Because in God's system, we, you know, God did give directives and orders for when people, let's say, would be put to death. But to be, and even under that system, he was giving commands to the military. I mean, that it might be easier to be in a military like that. But today we don't have that. And we certainly don't have, we don't have anything like that. And we have, you could be, you know, if you're in the military now, you could be called on to go kill anybody, anywhere, anytime. And I mean, you might be able to argue your way out of it, but I mean, your life is not your own. You have to break the Sabbath. You have to do all these things. I mean, this is a very broad principle. It overlaps many principles. Of course, we have the issue of suicide. Are you allowed to kill yourself? No, you are not allowed to do that, because only God, who's the giver of life, has the authority to take life, and he does not give you that authority to take your own life. And certainly you should not be helping somebody else to kill themselves. This issue of assisted suicide, euthanasia, these things are not allowed under the law of God. The killing of animals, that is allowed. Cruelty to animals is not allowed, but the killing of animals to meet our needs and that kind of thing is allowed. Because this commandment is not about, it's not saying this general principle, don't kill, don't step on a fly, that's not the commandment. Commandment has to do with dealing with fellow man. But God does have principles about dealing with animals. Of course, abortion. That's, again, taking the prerogative to decide whether to terminate life. That's not up to us. And if we do it, we're guilty of murder. And as I say about that, you know, I believe that from conception, this is a human being. But it really doesn't matter whether you believe that or not, because you actually, in my opinion, would have to give the benefit of the doubt. Because if there was no way to know, that's where you err. You're on the side of not killing somebody. And if you do, then you're still guilty of murder, because what you're killing, you know that you're not fully confident that that's, or maybe you are fully confident, but you're just way off because you're not listening to what God says, and only He has the authority to terminate life or to command others to do so. And here's something I want to get to briefly, but I think we need to because it's something we might not think of as applying to this commandment, but I believe it very much does, and it shows the broadness of this commandment. Turn over to James 2. James chapter 2. In James chapter 2, we see something very interesting. The Apostle James says, and let's look at the verses 1 through 4. He says, "My brethren, do not hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with partiality, showing favoritism," he's saying. We're not to be doing that. We're not to be showing favoritism. "For if there should come into your assembly a man with gold rings and fine apparel, there should also come in a poor man in filthy clothes. You pay attention to the one wearing the fine clothes, say to him, 'You sit here in a good place,' and say to the poor man, 'You stand there, or sit here at my footstool.' Have you not shown partiality or favoritism among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" Notice that. Have you not become judges with evil thoughts? What are we talking about here? We're talking about the issue of valuing or devaluing fellow human beings. This is the general principle that we're really talking about. Now, what does James say about this? This is fascinating, and I'd like you to look here down at verse 8. He says, because he talks a little bit more about this, of how you're not to dishonor these people. Verse 8, "If you really fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you do well." So that's the general principle. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. That all the last six of the commandments are embraced by this commandment. But what is this commandment? Where does this issue of partiality fit in those last six commandments? This is the interesting thing. Notice what James says. Verse 9, "But if you show partiality, if you show favoritism, you commit sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors." He's saying showing favoritism is against God's law. What does he say then? He says, "For whoever shall keep the whole law, yet stumble in one point, he is guilty of all." So this is a law, the royal law, and it has points. What law is this? The royal law with these points, and he's going to list some, is very obvious when he says, "For he who said, 'Do not commit adultery,' also said, 'Do not murder.'" We're talking about the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments. Well, where is this issue of partiality in the Ten Commandments? He says, "Now, if you do not commit adultery, but you do murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. So speak and so do, as those will be judged by the law of liberty." And that's all he says about this. He says, "With judgments without mercy, the ones who've shown no mercy." And that's important too, because you're supposed to show mercy to people, not kill them, right? And you're supposed to, and the principle, the broad principle of mercy is loving others, as was mentioned, but valuing them as human beings, not devaluing them because of their status, because of their wealth, because of what they have. If you look at this section, it seems to me very clear, and we almost never would recognize this, that what James is saying is that showing favoritism is a violation of the commandment against murder. See? He says, you are supposed to keep the commandments, and you maybe you don't commit adultery, but if you murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. And that is embraced. That's the only commandment he gives that is talking about here. So that is embraced within the spirit of the sixth commandment, which is kind of bizarre because we normally would never think of showing favoritism as having anything to do with murder. But the reason it does is because when we understand the broad principle and intent of this commandment, it has to do with valuing people, showing mercy and kindness to them, not depriving them of life, not depriving them of their joy and happiness. These are all part of the intent of the commandment. It's much bigger than the mere letter wording of it. We have to know what is behind it. Why did God give this? And so that is, again, part of the overall spirit. Now, kidnapping and enslavement also fall within this devaluing. We want to think about it. If you deprive someone of their life, obviously, but if you deprive someone of their will, if you capture them and take them away or enslave them, you have done just, you've done bad too. And you have not valued them as a person. And there's a strong penalty for that. We see it in Deuteronomy 24. If you'll flip over there, this is the last place I'll have you turn, and then we'll conclude. If you look over at Deuteronomy 24, and of course this overlaps with stealing, kidnapping overlaps with stealing. You're stealing a person. You're stealing their future. You're stealing a lot of things about them. But of course you're stealing the future of someone you murder too, aren't you? I mean, there's parallels and overlaps with all these commandments. But Deuteronomy 24, verse 7, God says, if a man is found kidnapping any of his brethren, the children of Israel, and mistreats him or sells him, you know, into slavery, then that kidnapper shall die, and you shall put away the evil from among you. This is evil, and it is worthy of execution of the death penalty because it is a capital offense. It is depriving someone of life. And that is not acceptable according to God's commandments, according to the commandment against murder, which in its broad spirit tells us to show mercy and to show kindness and to value people, to give them their proper due and value as human beings created in the image of God, that we have no right to take life from except on His command and by His word. So these are, again, just these broad principles. These commandments are so broad. They say so much more than what they do in the letter. We have to see that. And when we examine our lives now as we're coming up on the Passover and we're thinking about the commandments, let's think about each of these commandments. I mean, one good way to examine ourselves is by the standard of the Big Ten. But as we're going through these to see how we're following those, let's consider them in their broad spirit and what they really demand of us. It's much more than what they say in the letter. It's a whole focus and way of life. And they're all joined together. They're not in isolation. If you break one point, as James said, you break them all. And you really do. Because the same principles, the broad principles, are to be found in them all. And with that, we'll close this sermon. And next time, we'll get to at least one more commandment, but I think we'll probably get to a few more. Maybe I'll leave maybe 7, 8, 9, I don't know, we'll see. 10, I bet, is its own. Hopefully we'll get there probably sometime after the Passover. Anyway, with that, I'll let us ruminate on that as we come up on the Passover.